The Ring and the Book by Robert Browning. Book 2. Half Rome.
What, you, sir, come too? Just the man I'd meet. Be ruled by me and have a care of the crowd this way, while fresh folk go and get their gaze. I'll tell you like a book and save your shins. Fee, what a roaring day we've had. Whose fault? Lorenzo and Lucina. Here's a church to hold a crowd at need, accommodate all comers from the Corso. If this crush make not its priests ashamed of what they show for temple room, don't prick them to draw purse, and down with bricks and mortar, eke us out the beggarly transept with its bit of apse, into a decent space for Christian ease. Why, today's lucky pearl is cast to swine. Listen, and estimate the luck they've had. The right man, and I hold him.
Sir, do you see? They laid both bodies in the church this morn, the first thing, on the chancel, two steps up, behind the little marble balustrade. Disposed them. Pietro, the old murdered fool, to the right of the altar, and his wretched wife on the other side. In trying to count stabs, people supposed Violante showed the most, till somebody explained us that mistake. His wounds had been dealt out in different wear, but she took all her stabbings in the face, since punished thus solely for honor's sake. Honoris causa, that's the proper term. A delicacy there is, our gallants hold, when you avenge your honor, and only then that you disfigure the subject, fray the face, not just take life and end in clownish guise. It was Violante gave the first offense, got therefore the conspicuous punishment, while Pietro, who helped merely, his mere death, answered the purpose, so his face went free. We fancied even, free as you please, that face showed itself still intolerably wronged, was wrinkled over with resentment yet, nor calm at all, as murdered faces use, once the worst ended. An indignant air of the head there was. 'Tis said the body turned round and away, rolled from Violante's side, where they had laid it, loving husband-like. If so, if corpses can be sensitive, why did not he roll right down altar step, roll on through nave, roll fairly out of church, deprive Lorenzo of the spectacle, pay back thus the succession of affronts whereto this church had served as theatre? For see, at that same altar where he lies, to that same inch of step was brought the babe for blessing after baptism, and there styled Pompilia, and a string of names beside, by his bad wife some 17 years ago, who purchased her simply to palm on him, flatter his dotage, and defraud the heirs. Wait a while. Also to this very step did this Violante, 12 years afterward, bring, the mock-mother, that child-cheat full-grown, Pompilia, in pursuance of her plot. And there, brave God and man a second time, by linking a new victim to the lie. There, having made a match unknown to him, she, still unknown to Pietro, tied the knot, which nothing cuts except this kind of knife. Yes, made her daughter, as the girl was held, marry a man, and honest man beside, and man of birth to boot. Clandestinely, because of this, because of that, because of the devil's will to work his worst for once. Confident she could top her part at need, and when her husband must be told in turn, ply the wife's trade, play off the sex's trick, and alternating worry with quiet qualms, bravado with submissiveness, quick fool her Pietro into patience. So it proved. Eh, 'tis 4 years since man and wife they grew, this Guido Franceschini and this same Pompilia, foolishly thought, falsely declared a Comparini and the couple's child. Just at this altar, where beneath the peace of Master Guido Reni, Christ on cross, second and not observable in Rome, that couple lie now, murdered yester-eve. Even the blind can see a providence here.
From dawn till now that it is growing dusk, a multitude has flocked and filled the church, coming and going, coming back again, till to count crazed one. Rome was at the show. People climbed up the columns, fought for spikes of the chapel rail to perch themselves upon, jumped over, and so broke the wooden work painted like porphyry to deceive the eye. Served the priests right. The organ loft was crammed. Women were fainting. No few fights ensued. In short, it was a show repaid your pains. For though their room was scant, undoubtedly, yet they did manage matters, to be just, a little at this Lorenzo. Body o' me. I saw a body exposed once. Never mind. Enough that here the bodies had their due. No stinginess in wax, a row all round, and one big taper at each head and foot. So people pushed their way and took their turn, saw, threw their eyes up, crossed themselves, gave place to pressure from behind, since all the world knew the old pair, could talk the tragedy over from first to last. Pompilia, too. Those who had known her. What 'twas worth to them! Guido's acquaintance was in less request. The Count had lounged somewhat too long in Rome, made himself cheap. With him were hand and glove, barbers and blear-eyed, as the ancient sings. Also, he is alive and like to be. Had he considerately died, aha! I jostled Lucasini on his staff, mute in the midst, the whole man one amaze, staring amain and crossing brow and breast. "How now?" asked I. "'Tis 70 years, quoth he, since I first saw, holding my father's hand, bodies set forth. A many have I seen, yet all was poor to this I live and see. Here the world's wickedness seals up the sum, what with Molinos' doctrine and this deed, Antichrist surely come, and doomsday near. May I depart in peace. I have seen my sea." "Depart, then," I advised, "nor block the road for youngsters still behindhand with such sights." "Why, no," rejoins the venerable sire. "I know it's horrid, hideous past belief, burdensome far beyond what I can bear. But they do promise when Pompilia dies in the course of the day, and she can't outlive night, they'll bring her body also to expose beside the parents, 1, 2, 3 abreast. That were indeed a sight which, might I see, I trust I should not last to see the like." Whereat I bade the senior spare his thanks, since doctors give her till tonight to live and tell us how the butchery happened. "Ah, but you can't know," sighs he. "I'll not despair. Besides, I'm useful explaining things, as how the dagger laid there at the feet caused the peculiar cuts. I mind its make, triangular in the blade, a Genoese, armed with those little hook teeth on the edge to open in the flesh, nor shut again. I like to teach a novice. I shall stay." And stay he did, and stay, be sure, he will. A personage came by the private door at noon to have his look. I name no names. Well, then, His Eminence the Cardinal, whose servitor in honorable sort Guido was once, the same who made the match. Will you have the truth? Whereof we see effect. No sooner whisper ran he was arrived than up pops Curate Carlo, a brisk lad who never lets a good occasion slip, and volunteers improving the event. We looked he'd give the history's self some help, treat us to how the wife's confession went. This morning she confessed her crime, we know, and maybe throw in something of the priest, if he's not ordered back, punished anew. The gallant, Caponsacchi, Lucifer in the garden where Pompilia, Eve-like, lured her Adam Guido to his fault and fall. Think you we got a sprig of speech akin to this from Carlo, with the cardinal there? Too wary he was, Too widely awake, I trow. He did the murder in a dozen words, then said that all such outrages crop forth in the course of nature when Molinos tares are sown for wheat, flourish and choke the church. So slid on to the abominable sect and the philosophic sin. We've heard all that, and the cardinal too, who bookmade on the same. But for the murder, left it where he found. Oh, but he's quick, the curate, minds his game, and after all, we have the main of the fact. The case could not well be simpler. Mapped, as it were, we follow the murder's maze from source to sea, by the red line, past mistake. One sees, indeed, not only how all was and must have been, but cannot other than be, to the end of time. Turn out here by the Ruspoli. Do you hold Guido was so prodigiously to blame? A certain cousin of yours has told you so? Heh, exactly. Here's a friend shall set you right. Let him but have the handsel of your ear. These wretched Comparini were once gay and galliard, of the modest middle class. Born in this quarter 70 years ago, and married young, they lived the accustomed life. Citizens as they were, of good repute, and childless, naturally took their ease, with only their two selves to care about and use the wealth for. Wealthy is the word, since Pietro was possessed of house and land, and specially one house, when good days were, in Via Victoria, the respectable street where he lived mainly. But another house of less pretension did he buy betimes, the villa meant for jaunts and jollity, in the Pauline district, to be private there. Just what puts murder in an enemy's head. Moreover, and here's the worm in the core, the germ of the rottenness and ruin which arrived, he owned some usufruct, had money's use lifelong, but to determine with his life in heir's default. So Pietro craved an heir. The story always old and always new. Shut his fool's eyes fast on the visible good and wealth for certain, opened them owl-wide on fortune's sole piece of forgetfulness, the child that should have been and would not be. Hence, 17 years ago, conceive his glee when first Violante, twixt a smile and a blush, with touch of agitation proper, too, announced that, spite of her unpromising age, the miracle would in time be manifest. An heir's birth was to happen, and it did. Somehow or other, how, in all good time, by a trick, a sleight of hand, you are to hear, a child was born, Pompilia, for his joy, plaything at once and prop, a fairy gift, a saint's grace, or, say, grant to the good God, a fiddle-pin's end. What imbeciles are we? Look now. If someone could have prophesied, for love of you, for liking to your wife, I undertake to crush a snake I spy, settling itself in the soft of both your breasts. Give me yon babe to strangle painlessly. She'll soar to the safe. You'll have your crying out, then sleep, then wake, then sleep, then end your days in peace and plenty, mixed with mild regret. 30 years hence, when Christmas takes old folk. How had old Pietro sprung up, crossed himself, and kicked the conjurer? Whereas you and I, being wise with after-wit, had clapped our hands. Nay, added in the old fool's interest, strangle the black-eyed babe. So far, so good. But on condition you relieve the man of the wife, and throttle him Violante, too. She is the mischief. We had hit the mark. She, whose trick brought the babe into the world, she it was, when the babe was grown a girl, judged a new trick should reinforce the old, send vigor to the lie now somewhat spent by 12 years' service, lest Eve's rule decline over this Adam of hers, whose cabbage plot throve dubiously since turned fool's paradise, spite of a nightingale on every stump. Pietro's estate was dwindling day by day, while he, wrapped, far above such mundane care, crawled all fours with his baby pick-a-back, sat at serene cat's cradle with his child, or took the measured tallness, top to toe, of what was grown a great girl 12 years old. Till, sudden at the door, a tap discreet, a visitor's premonitory cough, and poverty had reached him in her rounds. This came when he was past the working time, had learned to dandle and forgot to dig. And who must but Violante cast about, contrive and task that head of hers again? She who had caught one fish could make that catch a bigger still in angler's policy. So, with an angler's mercy for the bait, her minnow was set wriggling on its barb and tossed to the midstream. That is, this grown girl, with the great eyes and bounty of black hair and first crisp youth that tempts a jaded taste, was whisking the way of a certain man who snapped. Count Guido Franceschini the Aretine was head of an old noble house enough, not over rich, you can't have everything, but such a man as riches rub against, readily stick to. One with a right to them, born in the blood. 'Twas in his very brow, always to knit itself against the world. So be beforehand, when that stinted due, service and suit. The world ducks and defers. As such folks do, he had come up to Rome to better his fortune, and since many years was friend and follower of a cardinal, waiting the rather thus on Providence, that a shrewd younger poorer brother yet, the Abate Paolo, a regular priest, had long since tried his powers and found he swam with the deftest on the Galilean pool. But then he was a webfoot, free of the wave, and no ambiguous dab chick hatched to strut, humbled by any fond attempt to swim when fiercer fowl usurped his dunghill top. A whole priest, Paolo, no mere piece of one like Guido, tacked thus to the church's tail. Guido, moreover, as the head of the house, claiming the main prize, not the lesser luck, the center lily, no mere chickweed fringe. He waited and learned waiting 30 years. Got promise, missed performance. What would you have? No petty post rewards a nobleman for spending youth in splendid lackey work, and there's concurrence for each rarer prize. When that falls, rougher hand and readier foot push aside Guido, spite of his black looks. The end was, Guido, when the warning showed the first white hair in the glass, gave up the game, determined on returning to his town, making the best of bad incurable, patching the old palace up and lingering there the customary life out with his kin, where honor helps to spice the scanty bread. Just as he trimmed his lamp and girt his loins to go his journey and be wise at home, in the right mood of disappointed worth, who but Violante sudden spied her prey, where was I with that angler simile, and threw her bait, Pompilia, where he sulked. A gleam in the gloom. What if he gained thus much, wrung out this sweet drop from the bitter past, bore off this rosebud from the prickly brake, to justify such torn clothes and scratched hands, and after all brought something back from Rome? Would not a wife serve at Arezzo well to light the dark house, lend a look of youth to the mother's face grown meagre, left alone and famished with the emptiness of hope? Old Donna Beatrice? Wife you want, would you play family representative, carry you elder brotherly, high and right, or what may prove the natural petulance of the third brother, younger, greedier still? Girolamo, also a fledgling priest, beginning life in turn with callow beak agape for luck, no luck had stopped and stilled. Such were the pinks and grays about the bait, persuaded Guido, gulped down hook and all. What constituted him so choice a catch, you question? Past his prime and poor beside? Ask that of any she who knows the trade. Why, First, here was a nobleman with friends, a palace one might run to and be safe when presently the threatened fate should fall. A big-browed master to block doorway up, parley with people bent on pushing by, and praying the mild Pietro quick clear scores. Is birth a privilege and power, or no? Also, but judge of the result desired, by the price paid and manner of the sale. The count was made woo, win, and wed at once, asked and was hailed for answer, lest the heat should cool, to San Lorenzo, one blind eve, and had Pompilia put into his arms of the sly there, by a hasty candle-blink, with sanction of some priest confederate, properly paid to make short work and sure. So did old Pietro's daughter change her style for Guido Franceschini's lady wife, ere Guido knew it well. And why this haste and scramble and indecent secrecy? Lest Pietro, all the while in ignorance, should get to learn, gainsay, and break the match. His peevishness had promptly put aside such honor and refused the proffered boon, pleased to become authoritative once. She remedied the willful man's mistake, did our discreet Violante. Rather say, thus did she, lest the object of her game, Guido the Gold One, give him but a chance, a moment's respite, time for thinking twice, might count the cost before he sold himself, and try the clink of coin they paid him with. But past, the bargain struck, the business done, once the clandestine marriage over thus, all parties made perforce the best of the fact. Pietro could play vast indignation off, be ignorant and astounded, dupe alike at need of wife, daughter, and son-in-law, while Guido found himself in flagrant fault, must e'en do suit and service, soothe, subdue a father not unreasonably chafed, bring him to terms by paying son's devoir. Pleasant initiation. The end, this. Guido's broad back was saddled to bear all, Pietro, Violante, and Pompilia too. Three lots cast confidently in one lap, three deadweights with one arm to lift the three out of their limbo up to life again. The Roman household was to strike fresh root in a new soil, graced with a novel name, gilt with an alien glory. Aretine, henceforth, and never Roman any more. By treaty and engagement. Thus it ran. Pompilia's dowry for Pompilia's self, as a thing of course. She paid her own expense. No loss nor gain there. But the couple, you see, they for their part turned over, first of all, their fortune, in its rags and rottenness, to Guido. Fusion and confusion, he and his with them and theirs. Whatever rag with a coin residuary fell on floor, when Brother Paolo's energetic shake should do the relics justice. Since 'twas thought, once vulnerable Pietro out of reach, that left at Rome as representative, the Abate, backed by a potent patron here, and otherwise with purple flushing him, might play a good game with the creditor, make up a moiety which, great or small, should go to the common stock. If anything, Guido's, so far repayment of the cost about to be. And if, as looked more like, nothing, why, all the nobler cost were his, who guaranteed, for better and for worse, to Pietro and Violante, house and home, kith and kin, with the pick of company, and life of the fat of the land, while life should last. How say you to the bargain, at first blush? Why did a middle-aged, not silly man show himself thus besotted all at once? Quoth Solomon, one black eye does it all. They went to Arezzo, Pietro and his spouse, with just the dusk of the day of life to spend, eager to use the twilight, taste a treat, enjoy for once, with neither stay nor stint, the luxury of lord and ladyship, and realized the stuff and nonsense long a simmer in their noddles, vent the fume born there and bred, The citizens conceit how fares nobility while crossing earth. What rampart or invisible bodyguard keeps off the taint of common life from such? They had not fed for nothing on the tales of grandees who give banquets worthy Jove, spending gold as if Plutus paid a whim, served with obeisances as when... what god? I'm at the end of my tether. 'Tis enough you understand what they came primed to see. While Guido, who should minister the sight, stay all this qualmish greediness of soul with apples and with flagons, for his part was set on life diverse as pole from pole. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, what else was he just now awake from, sick and sage, after the very debauch they would begin? Suppose such stuff and nonsense really were that bubble they were bent on blowing big. He had blown already till he burst his cheeks, and hence found soapsuds bitter to the tongue. He hoped now to walk softly all his days in soberness of spirit, if haply so, pinching and paring, he might furnish forth a frugal board, bare sustenance no more, till times that could not well grow worse should mend. Thus minded, then, two parties mean to meet and make each other happy. The first week, and fancy strikes fact and explodes in full. This, shrieked the Comparini, this the count, the palace, the signorial privilege, the pomp and pageantry were promised us? For this have we exchanged our liberty, our competence, our darling of a child? To house, as spectres in a sepulchre, under this black stone heap, the street's disgrace, grimmest as that is of the gruesome town, and here pick garbage on a pewter plate, or cough at verjuice dripped from earthenware? Oh, Via Vittoria! Oh, the other place in the Pauline! Did we give you up for this? Where's the foregone housekeeping, good and gay, the neighborliness, the companionship, the treat and feast when holidays came round, the daily feast that seemed no treat at all, called common by the uncommon fools we were? Even the sun that used to shine at Rome, where is it? Robbed and starved and frozen too. We will have justice, justice if there be. Did not they shout? Did not the town resound? Guido's old lady mother Beatrice, who since her husband, Count Tommaso's death, had held sole sway in the house, the doited crone, slow to acknowledge, curtsy, and abdicate, was recognized of true navarical type, dragon and devil. His brother Girolamo came next in order. Priest was he? The worse! No way of winning him to leave his mumps and help the laugh against old ancestry and formal habits long since out of date, letting his youth be patterned on the mode approved of where Violante laid down law. Or did he brighten up by way of change, dispose himself for affability? The malapert, too complaisant by half to the alarmed young novice of a bride. Let him go buzz, betake himself elsewhere, nor singe his fly-wings in the candle-flame. 4 months' probation of this purgatory, dog-snap and cat-claw, curse and counter-blast, the devil's self had been sick of his own din, and Pietro, after trumpeting huge wrongs at church and marketplace, pillar and post, square's corner, street's end, now the palace step, and now the wine-house bench, while on her side, Violante up and down was voluble in whatsoever pair of her ears would perk, from goody, gossip, catter-cousin and sib, curious to peep at the inside of things, and catch in the act pretentious poverty at its wit's end to keep appearance up, make both ends meet. Nothing the vulgar loves like what this couple pitched them right and left. Then, their worst done that way, they struck tent, marched, renounced their share of the bargain, flung what dues Guido was bound to pay in Guido's face, left their heart's darling, treasure of the twain, and so forth. The poor, inexperienced bride, to her own devices. Bad Arezzo wrought, and the life signorial, and sought Rome once more. I see the comment ready on your lip. The better fortune Guido's, free at least by this defection of the foolish pair. He could begin make profit in some sort of the young bride and the new quietness. Lead his own life now, henceforth breathe unplagued. Could he? You know the sex like Guido's self. Learn the Violante nature. Once in Rome, by way of helping Guido lead such life, her first act to inaugurate return was, she got pricked in conscience. Jubilee gave her the hint. Our Pope, as kind as just, attained his 80 years, announced a boon should make us bless the fact, held Jubilee. Short shrift, prompt pardon for the light offense, and no rough dealing with the regular crime. So this occasion were not suffered slip. Otherwise, sins commuted as before, without the least abatement in the price. Now, who had thought it? All this while, it seems, our sage Violante had a sin of a sort. She must compound for now, or not at all. Now be the ready riddance. She confessed Pompilia was a fable, not a fact. She never bore a child in her whole life. Had this child been a changeling, that were grace in some degree. Exchange is hardly theft. You take your stand on troop. The truth, ere leap your lie. Here was all lie. No touch of truth at all. All the lie hers. Not even Pietro guessed he was as childless still as 12 years since. The babe had been a find in the filth heap. Sir, catch from the kennel. There was found a Rome, down in the deepest of our social dregs, a woman who professed the wanton's trade under the requisite thin coverture, communis meretrix and washerwife. The creature thus conditioned found by chance motherhood like a jewel in the muck, and straightway either trafficked with her prize or listened to the tempter and let be. Made pact abolishing her place and part in womankind, beast fellowship indeed. She sold this babe 8 months before its birth to our Violante, Pietro's honest spouse, well famed and widely instanced as that crown to the husband, virtue in a woman's shape. She it was bought and paid for, passed the thing off as the flesh and blood and child of her, despite the flagrant 50 years. And why? Partly to please old Pietro, fill his cup with wine at the late hour when lees are left, and send him from life's feast rejoicingly. Partly to cheat the rightful heirs agape, each uncle's cousin's brother's son of him, for that same principle of the usufruct, it vexed him he must die and leave behind. Such was the sin had come to be confessed. Which of the tales, the first or last, was true? Did she so sin once, or confessing now, sin for the first time? Either way you will. One sees a reason for the cheat. One sees a reason for a cheat in owning cheat where no cheat had been. What of the revenge? What prompted the contrition all at once, made the avowal easy, the shame slight? Why, prove they but Pompilia not their child, no child, no dowry. This, suppose their child, had claimed what this, shown alien to their blood, claimed nowise. Guido's claim was through his wife, null then, and void with hers. The biter bit, d'ye see. For such repayment of the past, one might conceive the penitential pair ready to bring their case before the courts, publish their infamy to all the world, and arm in arm, go chuckling thence, content. Is this your view? 'Twas Guido's anyhow, and colorable. He came forward then, protested in his very bride's behalf against this lie and all it led to, least of all the loss of the dowry. No. From her and him alike he would expunge the blot, erase the brand of such a bestial birth, participate in no hideous heritage gathered from the gutter to be garnered up and glorified in a palace. Peter and Paul! But that who likes may look upon the pair exposed in yonder church, and show his skill by saying which is eye and which is mouth through those stabs thick and threefold. But for that, a strong word on the liars and their lie might crave expression and obtain it, sir. Though prematurely, since there's more to come, more than will shake your confidence in things your cousin tells you. May I be so bold? End of part 1 of The Ring and the Book.